Here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Well, Bill Rock, you got it half right. We've got John Gambling. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is on his way. As soon as he gets here, we will get into our things. It happens sometimes. You know, that traffic between City Hall and here, that block and a half, can be a killer. I'm sure he's got other things to do as well. He's on his way. I know that for a fact. We have been in contact with the mayor and his folks. While we were waiting on him, back down to Washington for just a moment on a completely different subject. Over the last 30 years, after the last three decades, Congress has demanded stricter efficiency standards on 30 categories of products as varied as air conditioners and industrial boilers. But successive administrations have failed to write regulations to enforce the laws, even when ordered by the courts to do so. Mr. Obama says he wants to do something about it, and he has told his people that he wants to get some regulations in here to do some more things, to make things more efficient. I would have to applaud this on any level. It just is a common sense thing to do. I'm not quite sure why over 30 years we haven't been, even though the laws have been instructive, they have not been specific in just exactly what to do. Nine categories of products, including ovens, vending machines, microwave ovens, dishwashers, and light bulbs, are on the table right now down in Washington. Former President George Bush left office with only seven standards completed and 15 still to be written. You have to ask yourself why this would be so. The only answer you can come up with is, and this goes back 30 years, so it is not just the Republicans, not just George Bush or Bill Clinton. It goes back even further than that, that nothing has been done along these lines. And one can only speculate that it is the lobbyists from these various industries that don't want to have to spend the money. But one would think that it would work to their benefit to make their products as efficient as possible. We've seen it with refrigerators. You get those energy stickers on the side of them. You also see it on air conditioners to a certain degree. There are different efficiencies. And I don't know about you, but I know that when I go shopping for those, I look for the cost, and then I look for the efficiency and the highest that I can possibly find. So I can't imagine that that would be a negative when it comes to marketing a product. It would only be an enhancement. So the intellect here escapes me. Why would there be such a pushback here? Congress has ordered the phasing out of traditional incandescent light bulbs by 2014. And yet we haven't seen much progress along those lines. I mean, we see fluorescents. Fluorescents are actually on the list of having their efficiency improved, among other things. But when you hear this, and as I said earlier, I absolutely applaud the efforts here to make the things that we all use and use in such immense and enormous quantity, like light bulbs and the rest, to be more efficient or as efficient as they possibly can, or completely redesigned. We're starting to see LED lights that are being installed in many places. They're not very practical in the house as of yet, but they're on the way. Having said all of that, I go back to a place that I've come too many times, and that is, if Congress is so concerned about our efficiency, and they are, and the new president is certainly waving the ecology flag probably higher and louder than anybody, and again, it makes sense, why don't we demand solar power, solar hot water, at the minimum, on every new house that's been built? Now, if you remember back in the first energy shortage, when Jimmy Carter was president, there was an almost identical clarion call for the reduction of our dependence on oil, on foreign oil. And Congress even moved into solar hot water and wind generation and started giving tax credits to put these things in place. And it works. Solar hot water even works in New York, even at this high latitude. I know because I had it, and I had it on two houses, and it worked absolutely phenomenally. But why, since 1977, why haven't we demanded that every new house have this sort of capability? If we had, over the last 40 years, done something about it, it would have been an enormous plus for us by this time. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
I have a gift for you.
You do? Is that why that you've been out shopping? Is that where you...
No. Stu has been out shopping. This is a one and only. He tells me it's the only one in existence. These are the seeds that were causing the smell, and it's in a little I Love New York thing. You can keep it on your desk.
I heard you yesterday. Do you know? Can you tell us what the name of those seeds are again? I can't remember.
Fenugreek.
Fenugreek.
I had to check with my ace press secretary right here. Fenugreek.
And these are true, honest to goodness fenugreek.
Well, I don't know that, but Stu tells me that, and Stu never lies.
He never lies, indeed. How are you this morning?
I am running late. I don't know why. I got up plenty early.
Well, that's okay. We'll forgive you. It's been a very big week. I mean, in fact, in the 7 years, this is probably as big a week as you have had. I mean, you got the fenugreek seed smell taken care of.
That was big time.
And you got bitten by a rat.
Not a rat.
A rodent.
A groundhog.
How's the finger? I see you still have the Band-Aid on.
Well, I've got the upper teeth. They're probably called incisors, as I remember.
I have no idea.
Who remembers?
Yeah. Who's a dentist?
And lots of them they'll call in. And his lower teeth, yes.
I have to ask you.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Exactly. Stu Loser, the press secretary. I was watching on Monday.
Right.
And live as you were doing this.
Of course. Everybody. And, nationwide, I'm sure.
And so I saw what was happening, and I saw Chuck go in and out and nip at your fingers and that thing. And then you grabbed this thing.
Yep.
And then you held it. And it looked to me, I couldn't hear because the sound was down, but it looked to me like you were saying to yourself, now what do I do?
No. Last year or the year before, when I held him, he has big claws, and he scratches. So this time I grabbed him around the stomach, so his legs were up in the air.
Right.
But when I reach in, he wouldn't come out. And so coach trainer, the curator, whatever, was pushing from one side of this little cage, and I'm pulling on the other with his ear of corn.
Oh, there was an encourager in the back.
Yeah, right,
oh,
and okay. Then he just gave up on the corn and thought my finger would be a nice thing to bite.
The other thing I speculated...
And it ruined a pair of gloves, right through the gloves.
I'm sure. The other thing I speculated, and then we will move on to more serious things, I speculated...
It's not your finger. What do you mean, more serious?
I speculated as to what the conversation in the car on back from Staten Island might have been like.
I just leave me alone. I mean, the glove was stopping the bleeding. You know, you put a piece of...
A
napkin
tourniquet?
And put it around it, and then you get to City Hall. You put a Band-Aid on it.
I
did talk to a doctor who said she had tetanus shots in the last 10 years, and I get them every couple of years. No problem there. Talked to the vet at the, or somebody did, at the zoo. This was a native born in the zoo, so you're not born groundhog, so you don't have to worry about rabies. And it's provided a lot of conversation.
Yeah,
you can dine out on this for a long time. Last night, I once again used the don't bite the hand that feeds you joke at a speech I gave. They loved it.
Big round of applause,
absolutely.
I'm sure. And here's a man, ladies and gentlemen, that for $1 does this job and puts his life on the line.
I pointed out I was putting my finger in the ways that I could protect the people of this city.
Exactly. Throwing your body on the
I'd love to tell you lots called and said thank you, but none. out of 8.3 million people, not one called.
Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let me take a break right here. We're coming right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning. It's a Friday. Don't forget, you get to ask the questions before we finish up here at 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Mike, 800-321-0710 here on the John Gambling Show. Jobless numbers coming out later today. They think it might go 7.5 nationally. I read in the papers today, New York's even north of that, maybe.
Really worrisome. I had coffee yesterday with an old friend. A woman lives here with her husband. Her two sons live in Europe. And, she's worried about losing her house. Her one son is in the movie business, and every project that he's been working on is canceled. The other one works for a bank, and he's worried about losing his job. And, you know, she said to me, it was interesting, she said she grew up, reasonably comfortably, and never in her life did she ever think that she would be in a situation where she was worried about some of these things. And it's all through our city and through the country, through the world. In Europe, actually, some of these places are worse than we are, although that doesn't give you any comfort.
There's no comfort there, right?
No, and I mean, those are the people who would come over here and spend money. But it's restaurants are half full or less. stores. A friend of mine was in Bergdorf's, I think, and said there are only four shoppers on the whole floor. They counted. It's a disaster. What we've got to do here is try to find ways. We can sit here and we can whip ourselves, or we can sit here and say,
Figure out what to do.
We can say what Washington should do. That's their problem, or the state. I've got to worry about what we can do. And, you know, we have all these things. Will they make a difference? They'll make some difference. We can, with training people, we're going to put 20,000 people, get 20,000 people jobs through the Department of Small Business Services. We combined it a number of years ago, if you remember, with a lot of yelling and screaming, with an educational unit the city had. They used to place 500 people a year. This last year we placed 17,000. This year, in spite of everything, we think we'll get 20,000 people jobs. It's nothing compared to the, or it's nothing. It's, you know, 7% of the people we think will lose their jobs, but it's something. And we really do believe that we can, over the next few years, create 400,000 new jobs. Now, some of those will just save those people who are going to be unemployed. Net-net, we'd probably come up with 100,000 more jobs, and that's a lot better than we've ever done before. So, you know, or actually, it's not a lot better. There was a point where we did have a program where we actually did more. So we think we can really accomplish this.
The budget problem is obviously top of the card for just about everybody these days, no matter what the venue. To here in New York City, you, of course, are looking for everybody to sacrifice and make some cuts. It was in the paper this week that the Municipal Labor Committee, representing a number of different unions, said, hey, we're not budging. We're not going to cut back, give back?
Well, it isn't giving back, number one. It's going forward, not getting as much. So this giving back is a bit of a misnomer and implies something. The Tier 5, which we want, and keep in mind, since we are trying to get 5, we have 4, 3, and 2 as well as 1. So in the past,
this is not a new idea.
Right. The city, state, and unions have negotiated. Times change. Tier 5, the idea here is to have less generous pension benefits and health benefits for those who we have yet to hire. Now, keep in mind, we're not going to be hiring anybody for a while. But even so, it would save a couple $100 million this year because the accountant that directs the pension fund says, well, that he would let us count, we think he will anyways, let us count some money this year. So it's a couple $100 million, which saves a lot of jobs, provides a lot of services, reduces a lot of taxes. $200 million is nothing to sneeze at. And the Tier 5 will down the road make an enormous difference as the workforce changes over time, people retire, and new people come in. The bottom line is, in this day and age, people are living into their 80s, and when somebody can retire at age 40 and get pensions benefits the rest of their life, it's just some, and health benefits, it's something we really can't afford. Copay, you know, there's not a lot of sympathy in the private sector. Everybody's pension fund in the private world has copay, or virtually everyone, and it's just the time has come. It's partially that it picks up part of the tab. It's also people think twice when they
use the product.
Christine Quinn had a good idea, maybe make it graduated, because if you're making $30,000 a year and somebody else is making $90,000 a year, the copay part is a much more serious thing for those at the lower end of the economic ladder than those at the higher end. But that's all, you know, keep in mind what you read in the paper. It's all part of a process. At this point, we are waiting to see what the federal government does. Then we're waiting to see what the state does. We have the luxury this time that the budget proposal that I put out January 30th doesn't have to be enacted into law until the end of June, because our July 1st is our next fiscal year. So we have the ability to spend some time thinking about the real implications, talking about with each other, working with the city council and the unions. And I think, in spite of the posturing, people understand we are in a different world than we were only 6 months ago, but dramatically different. And if any parts of the budget don't come through, then we're going to have to lay off people. The city's budget is fundamentally, we hire people, they provide services, we pay them, and with taxpayer dollars. That's what it is. And so if you don't want to have higher taxes, and there's probably some higher taxes built in every time to any of these things, but if you don't have even more taxes, then you just have to reduce the headcount. There's nothing else to cut out. I am optimistic that we'll get $1 billion for helping us pay for Medicaid, which is now $5 billion a year for the city.
Is that all the money that's coming direct to the city out of Washington?
There's
you
different
and Schumer
programs.
Talked about?
This one will come directly to the city.
Okay, that's that billion
And the state
dollars.
Gets an equal amount because, unlike many other states, the federal government pays 50% and the state and city split the other 50% equally. Education money, the governor in his budget, and I'm sympathetic with the governor. He's got to cut someplace. I just don't think we should be treated unfairly. He cut us and not elsewhere, not much elsewhere. But I think the federal government's going to send enough education money, this one through the state, probably, although there's a ways they could do it directly, which I much prefer. But if it goes through the state, then the governor can replace that budget cut with federal monies. He'll still have his cut, and we won't have to reduce the commitment to education. Yeah, New York City has increased its commitment to education the last half a dozen years by something like $5 billion. And the state, which traditionally picks up half our education bill, has only increased their commitment by $3 billion. So they've been, for all the talk about, you know, education, they've been cutting back the increases while we've been increasing them. And we've raised teachers' salaries by 43% over 7 years in three different stages. And the educational system gets better. I don't know if you saw the results yesterday, the number of black
AP?
And Latino kids taking AP courses.
It just
nobody ever thought there's any chance of doing any of this stuff. And it just goes to show you what you could do if you stay the course, keep making the investments. But we've got to have the money someplace. And if the federal government weren't to cut through and the state keeps that budget cut there, then we're going to have to make some real serious choices. If the state doesn't put back some of the legislature doesn't put back some of the governor's cut in revenue sharing, he cut $330 million out of the monies they normally send to the city, and that gets counted twice the way the numbers work. So that's $660 million, and we're the only five counties that got cut. Nobody else. There's 57 others that didn't. And I said, look, I'm sympathetic. We've got a cut. He's got a cut. Or he and the legislature have to cut, and we and the city council have to cut. But it should be fair. And this was not fair. So I'm assuming that'll come back. Hopefully the legislature will put back most of it. And then we have to work with the unions. If we don't have these other things, we're just going to have to do less. Now, my commissioners gag and say, you know, we keep cutting. We've cut $3 billion out of our expenses, which is the first place the state should look and the first place we should look. We've done it, and I hope they will do it. But if you don't have the revenue, you're going to have to make cuts. And it's going to hurt a lot of people and a lot of services. And the bottom line is the public doesn't want to pay anymore. At some point here, John, we're going to start driving people out of the city. Now, people always say that, but 1% of the people pay something like 48% of the taxes. And we need those taxes. And if they were to move to New Jersey or Connecticut or someplace else, it's going to be a very big problem. It would cut our revenues rather than raise our revenues and do it very precipitously and very quickly. And so we've got to try to find ways to have a variety of different taxes that are, while they may be annoying, they don't kill us. They will damage, no argument about that. The alternative is nothing that you could tolerate. You cannot have unsafe streets. You cannot have dirty streets. You cannot have worse schools. You cannot do any of these things. And, you know, that's what I keep saying to the commissioners. They say, how can we do more with less? I said, that's your job. That's what we have to do. I didn't bring the recession. Nobody likes the recession. But we're paid to keep providing services with whatever resources we can get. And if we can't get them, we still have to do our job.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we've got a lot of work to do here. We've got almost a half an hour. And, of course, if you'd like to ask the mayor a question, you will have the opportunity. All right, we continue here on the John Gambling Show, Friday Get Together. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 21 before 9 o'clock.
Before we get into something less important, I just wanted to say, I meant to mention it last week, about a week and a half ago, there was a Lance Corporal, a guy named Julian Brennan, 25 years old from Brooklyn, who died in Farah province in Afghanistan while supporting this Operation Enduring Freedom, they call it, and the Defense Department announced. And, you know, you wonder, here's another young guy dedicated, it's all volunteer army. People care. They are devoting their lives to protecting the rest of us. And, you know, his family is not going to forget. And unfortunately, too many other people will forget. While things are better in terms of we're losing fewer people, I don't know whether we're winning a war against terrorism. Only time will tell. You'll only be able decades from now to look back. But, you know, we're talking about things sometimes that aren't quite as important.
It's a tough situation. And when you read names, when you put names next to those that aren't coming home again, it hurts real bad.
If you look up at street corners in the city, we've named a lot of streets and street corners and plazas, whatever. And, you know, you never know who the people were and what they did. But, you know, there's somebody there that did something, probably gave their lives, probably still have a family who misses them, and the rest of us go about our lives. I mean, that's what civilization's about, but nevertheless, it'd be a shame if we forgot the sacrifice that people like this...
I'm glad you used this venue, this microphone, to help remember at least one person here. Unfortunately, you've done this too many times.
Yeah,
I mean,
hopefully not anymore,
exactly.
And history
no more.
Says you will have more.
No more. There is a discussion. I was going to use the word battle. I'll take that off the table and say that there is a discussion going on the continuance of mayoral control of the school system here. I gather Albany needs to make a decision by June. Is that correct? They got to vote on something?
The way mayoral control was put in, it was put in with a sunset provision,
right,
which means if they don't take it up, it goes away, if they don't vote on it. My assumption is there will be a bill called mayoral control passed by the legislature. I think that
you think it's going to be different than one now?
First, if they didn't do that, I think that there'd be riots in the streets, given what's the improvement. I mean, parents have choices. For the first time, we're funding all the schools equally. We used to fund the schools, John, that had the biggest pedagogical problems, typically minority kids coming from very poor families. And there, it's really a greater challenge for the teachers because you don't have the support at home in many cases, probably both parents if they exist work and that sort of thing. And we would fund them $2,000 or $3,000 less. And we did it for, 10 years before we came into office. Now every school is funded the same. There's some minor variations for special ed and English language learners and that sort of thing required by law. But fundamentally, what we did is we didn't take away from the schools that were overfunded. We just took the new monies we had and put them in the schools that were underfunded to make it all easy. So I think they will pass a bill. The question is, does it have mayoral control? Mayoral control is control. Control is you decide. If you go back and look, of all of the reforms that have got us 20% greater math scores, 20% greater English scores, 20% greater graduation rates, 20% less crime, all these things, not one of them would have been done by the old Board of Ed. The old Board of Ed was totally dysfunctional. It was political patronage. It was pay-to-play kind of politics. We've had 18 chancellors, I think, in the last 20 or 30 years, and they've had three heads of the teachers union. And you can see what happens. You know, in the end, the school system gets run for the people working there rather than for the teachers. Now, what's happened is it's now run for the students, and the teachers love it. People say, oh, I'll show you some teachers who don't love it. I'm sure there are. But when I came into office, there were 12,000 teachers that quit or retired every year. That's down to 5,000 that quit or retire every year. On a base of 80,000, that's now a very low turnover rate. When I came into office, we couldn't find replacements for the teachers that left that were certified. We had a whole bunch of teachers that were uncertified. Today, we get between 50 and 60,000 applicants from around the country from certified teachers who want to teach in our school system. That tells you that most teachers want this.
I spoke with Randy Weingarten yesterday, and she made it perfectly clear.
Her mother's very sick. It's very sad.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. She made it perfectly clear, though, that she and the UFT want more representation in this process, more seats around the table.
You know, you can't have it both ways. Either there's going to be somebody in charge or there's going to be a committee. Either management's going to run it or the people that they manage are going to run it. There is no going back would be a disaster. Not one of the reforms that we did that accounted for all this progress, not one would have ever gotten through. And hopefully the legislature will, we can convince them. And it's a democratic process. And I'm committed. I've talked to Shelley Silver and Malcolm Smith and David Pattison about it. You know, we're up in Albany. There's another group up there today trying to explain what the advantages are. And my hope is that the parents of these kids are going to call their assembly people and senators and say, no, you're not going to change this. And it's not one of these things. You can't have it both ways. Yes, the teachers' union wants to have more seats around the table. They're not supposed to be running the school system. The teachers' union's supposed to be negotiating with the management, not being part of the management. And that's just, you know, no organization could survive that way. And in fact, we have an ultimate example. Go back and look. Do you really want to go back to the days before we started, before mayoral control, when we were leaving all of our minority kids so far behind that there's generations that will never catch up? They're adults now. You'll never get them back to school. And they're, for the rest of their lives, they're going to be playing with less cards than people who got a good education. How could we ever allow that to happen? Can we really go back? I hope not.
Well, I'll tell you that she was pretty harsh on Joel Klein yesterday as well. Very harsh. I was surprised, and I took her to task.
Joel Klein is dedicating his life. This is a guy who could do lots of things. He is as qualified as any chancellor we've ever had. I think he's already set a record for longevity, which he will continue to expand on. He is a guy, his father, I think, was a postmaster, grew up in public housing, first one of his family to go to college. I think he went to Columbia and then Harvard Law School, but great schools like that. Taught, ran a big chunk of the Justice Department. If there was ever, as his academic record is off the charts, I'll match it against anybody ever. If there's ever anybody that was qualified to do this, it's him. And yes, they don't like him. Why? Because he makes decisions. And they're not decisions that they like. He's not saying you have to do less work for more money. He's saying, we'll give you more money, but you got to do more work. He's not saying that whether the students learn or not, you're still going to have your job. He's saying your job is to teach. And if you don't teach, you're not. It's not that we don't love the teachers, but this is run for the students. Either if the students don't learn, you change the teachers. In every other part of our society, you would not survive if you didn't do a good job. Your show. If people didn't like what you do, do you think the guy you work for would keep you? No.
5 minutes and then you're gone.
I don't think he'd last that long, John. I know him.
let me flip the page on you here. Just a little bit different subject altogether. There's a conversation in Albany about state drug laws and changing the Rockefeller laws, for example.
You know,
where do you fall on that?
I've talked to a lot of people. I just am not an expert. I really should spend some more time talking to John Feinblatt, our criminal justice coordinator, although it's up to the state. Some people say that it's just not true that you go to jail for 25 years for carrying a bag of marijuana for somebody else, which is the allegation. Other people say it is true. I just don't know. I'm a favor of strong drug laws, because drugs are a sure ways to get kids to go down a path with their whole lives and crime, and everything comes out of it. Whole lives go away. But it is also true you want to have them somewhat fair. And the problem is one set of laws judges interpret, or if you give the judges a lot of leeway, some judges just, it's turnstile justice. You walk in, oh, no harm, no foul. You go back in the street and you do it again. That's not any better than, maybe not any worse either, than putting people away for an inordinate period of time. You say, well, you know, you send them to jail, all they'll do is learn how to be a worse criminal. That may be true, but there is a point at which you just can't have people on the streets. We've got to do something about our correctional facilities in this country.
We spend so much money.
A bigger percentage of America's incarcerated than
anywhere.
I think any place else. Yeah. Corrections is a cute phrase, but you're not generally correcting things. And there are some good organizations, the Doe Fund, for example, which I've supported, George McDonald. They're trying to find people get out of jail, give them jobs. There's something called the Fortune Society. I'll tell you a great story on the subway. This was about a year and a half ago. This big hulking guy comes up to me. We're in the middle of the day. I was heading uptown on the subway and was standing on the platform. Big hulking guy comes up. He said, "I want to talk to you." And I said, what can I do for you? And he said, "I just got out of the slammer after 20 years and I can't get a job." I said, "Well, look, there are programs. I don't know which ones there. Here's my business card. Call me at this number. You'll get my voicemail. And I will have somebody call you back," which we did. He got a job. I think it was through the Fortune Society. And then about a couple months ago, I had Dennis Walcott call to see what happened to him. Still lives with his mother, still has his job. Now, I don't know if he's straightened his life out for the rest of his life, but
that's
at least...
That's a great story.
We need more of that, because exactly. if you just take people, put them in the slammer, and then throw them out in the streets without any skills, and nobody's going to hire them. Somebody was screaming, one of our senators wanted to increase the security at ports by doing background checks on drivers that come in. Well, every single job, if you have a criminal record and you can't get the job, what do you think they're going to do? Bouncers at restaurants or at the bars. You have a background check and you have a criminal record. You know, the law says, I think that's one of them I got checked, but one of those things, you can't get a job. Well, what do you expect them to do? You can't have it both ways. And it's easy to pass one law, but the unintended consequences are you're going to increase crime, not reduce it.
Those unintended consequences will come and bite you every single time, as we're seeing in too many different venues. Hang on a second. We'll get to the phones. Let me take our final break here. 800-321-0710. You will be next with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. All right, here we go. 5 minutes before 9 o'clock. Couple of minutes left, Mr. Mayor. Let us go right to the telephones. We're going to start with Roger over there in NJ. Hello, Roger. You got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I wanted to know the status of the proposed tunnel between New York and New Jersey. But before I do that, I just want to know, if you ever get tired of New York, we could use a good governor and a good couple of senators.
John Corzine I've known for a long time. Lautenberg I've known for a long time. The junior senator, a little bit of time.
Right.
Menendez, I've done some work with him. He's a pleasant guy. I just don't. Haven't known him for a long time the way I've known the other two. My mother comes from Jersey City, Dickinson High School. So Jeremiah Healy, I think, is the mayor. He's a great guy. I always have a good time with him. The tunnel, the good news is a few weeks ago, the Federal Transit Administration, I think it's called, approved the plan that New Jersey Transit has. The tunnel goes from Weehawken to just north of Penn Station, and it parallels the existing ones. And that means the federal government's going to pay $3 billion towards it. I think the total cost, if I remember, is something like $8 billion.
Yeah, I think it was at
least
$8
billion. But I gather it is progressing. And it's, we want a lot of people to be able to come in and shop and work in the city. New Jersey wants to be able to have that option, so it's good for everybody.
Can't have too many tunnels. Thank you, Roger. Let's see here. Let's go to Michael in Middletown. Michael, you're with John and the mayor. Go.
Mayor, I'm a big fan, actually, and my mother-in-law worked in your office.
Oh, great.
For a bunch of years. Listen, a few years ago when the teachers and the police and the fire department were all getting ready for contracts, and you basically came on the radio and stated, which is true in my opinion, that... the three major ways that taxes or revenue is raised, I should say, in the city is real estate tax, income tax, and sales tax. There are a few other ways,
Hey, Mike, what's the question? I only got a time problem, that's all.
That's fine. The question is, will you raise taxes to stop people from losing their jobs?
Well, I think higher taxes actually hurt economic activity, and net-net people do lose jobs. You use the revenue to keep municipal workers on the job, but in theory, and it's probably true, although it's a little harder to measure, throughout the economy, the people paying the taxes and the companies paying the taxes, those are the ones that do get hurt. So it's a transfer of wealth from really the private sector to the public sector. Keep in mind, number one, the city can only raise the property taxes. The only tax that we have that we control. Number two, we also have a payroll, sales tax and a personal income tax and business taxes and real estate transfer taxes. All of those, we need the state to change them. Typically, in all fairness, we ask them to. They do, but those really aren't up to us. I think what you'd like to do is to find a ways to do more with less and keep everybody working and not have any more taxes. That's not totally possible, and as you know, we did put back 6 months early the discount, the reduction that we had in the property tax, that 7%, got it back 6 months early, although we did mail out then the $400 rebates, which wiped out a chunk of it, but it got it going again. I don't know what the state's going to do. The real $64 question here is they just balanced their last year's budget. They've got a big deficit, 13, they say. Maybe it's that big, maybe it's bigger, I don't know. And we'll see what they do. And depending on what they do, then we'll look to see how we can balance our budget without hurting everybody any more than we have to. In our budget, because I have to put something in there, I put an increase of 0.25% in the sales tax. So, you know, if you're if you spend $5,000 a year, let's say, and clothing starts getting included, you know, for poor people, it is a lot of money. On the other hand, you know, you're talking about $50 or $100, depending on how you spend your money. So the short answer is we'll try to keep the services going, but I think, unfortunately, everybody wants to get paid. And if we can't negotiate, for example, a Tier 5 and copay on health insurance, if the state doesn't come through, if the federal government doesn't come through, if we can't keep cutting the expenses, then that's the last alternative. But it should be the last alternative. We've cut $3 billion in expenses out of our budget in the last 12 months. Then the state's going to have to do the same thing.
A question for... Virtually, we got just seconds left here. Not enough time, unfortunately, for another telephone call. But are you concerned, and the answer is going to have to be yes or no, probably, but are you concerned that with the stimulus money that's coming out of Washington in one form or another, in one amount or another, that when it disappears, all of these states and cities are going to be left with the costs of what was built on those dollars?
Well, it's worse than that. For example, there's this cops program. They give you some money to hire more cops, but then you have to pay for them
or
after the program, which you don't want to do.
Which you don't want to do. Mr. Mayor, have yourself a wonderful week.
You too.
Watch out for the groundhogs.
And looking forward to next week.
We'll see you next Friday.